Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Test. This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ. Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me, why don't they get a rope and hang me? Hey, is it a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh my God, it's early.
And I was describing a little bit ago about the technological miracle that's about to happen. But joining me via the wonders of Skype, courtesy of a very nice woman at Verizon in Grand Forks, North Dakota, is the All Marine Radio head chef. What's going on, man?
Good morning, Matt. How you doing, baby?
I'm all right. I'm all right, but you stop yelling, man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How are you?
Your microphone's a little on your phone's a little hot, but yeah. So you need to calm down and you need to just like dial it back a little bit.
How's that?
Oh, that's much better. Very good.
There you go.
Wow. You know what? Growing up before my eyes. Unbelievable.
Who knew?
Who knew?
Who knew I could turn it on? Thank you, Stacy in Verizon in Grand Forks, North Dakota.
Wow. So that's what when you're in person with him, this is what the Kimmy Big Pipe sounds like. Now we're supposed to talk about soup today. Okay, you told everybody.
Yeah, we're going to make leftover turkey soup, but we can talk about anything you want, boss man.
Okay, I've got a personal question. So I go to the store and I buy a steak. How long normally can I have that sit in the refrigerator before it goes bad?
A week.
A week. Okay.
Sure. If you sit your steak in the fridge,
yeah,
and have it wrapped in a container, a Ziploc baggie or a plastic container with a lid, that's fine. And that what you do when you do that, the steak starts to age and break down. You know, it gets more tender. And a lot of chefs will hang their steaks for a couple of weeks in the cooler with just air circulating around it, and they trim it up if there's any kind of purple stuff on the outside there, you know. But all that does is break the meat down and tenderizes it.
If I bring it home and it's wrapped in plastic, whether it's the butcher packaging, so it's in a plastic bag inside the paper wrapping, or if I take it out of that, I put it in a piece of Tupperware, where the bottom line is I don't freeze it, and it'll last for a week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And then when you grill it, any bacteria that is formed will be killed instantly.
We love that.
When it hits the heat. You know, all you have to do, folks, is go anywhere in the world except the United States, and you go into a butcher shop, and you see everything hanging raw and in the coolers and stuff. So... you're safe. You're very safe to leave it in the packaging that you brought it home in for up to a week.
All right. All right. Now, I have another question. I kind of got interested during Thanksgiving and about making pie crust.
Yeah.
And I was reading something one of my sisters sent me, and it was that my mother's pie crust, and one of the notes on it was, this comes from a card that has mom's handwriting, and it's verbatim, okay? So,
yeah.
Corporal Punishment Kathleen did not put anything that didn't taste really good into her mouth, and or into our mouths, okay? So, when she writes something down, it is the equivalent of what Moses brought down from the mountaintop, okay? That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So nobody jacks with Kathleen's handwritten recipes. All right.
It should be.
Having said that, okay, there was a bit of a controversy. Susan, my ex-wife, makes great cherry pie, which Kim is a fan of. And the crust is right. The crust is very good too. And so, but the she doesn't use. So the recipe calls for what, 3/4 of a cup of what is it? It's not Crisco. It's what is that stuff? The fat lard, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And then what? Yeah, then 2 cups of flour, you know, whatever else you put in there, right? A little bit of salt, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But then it comes time for my mother's recipe calls for 3 teaspoons of apple cider vinegar and 3 teaspoons of cold water. Now, the Betty Crocker recipe calls for 6 tablespoons of water. So I looked up on the internet. I said, you know what? My mother didn't do anything indiscriminately. Okay. So I don't know where she got that. So I did a search. Why is apple cider vinegar added to pie crust? And the answer says it keeps the pie crust, it keeps gluten from forming in the pie crust, which makes the pie crust firmer. So adding apple cider vinegar keeps the pie crust flakier. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a very long-winded question.
No.
Do you have any thoughts on that? Have you heard that? You grew up with your grandmother, who was what, editor of
Yeah, she Ladies' Home Journal, not the editor, just a food feature editor. Yes, she put a little bit of it, and it's to keep the gluten from forming and makes it a flakier crust. Another thing I would recommend when you're making pie crust is that if you use butter or you use Crisco or lard, it's got to be ice cold.
Ice cold?
Okay. Ice cold. And this helps with a flakier crust too. And it should be cut into little quarter-inch, half-inch cubes. And then you mix it with hand, and the least you handle your flour and butter or lard, the better it is. So you you use your fingertips and kind of crumble it, the flour and the butter lard, or if you use some people use a combination of both. It makes for a better pie crust.
Okay, let me ask you another question. What about my mother's recipe specifically calls for using a fork to mix the flour and ingredients with the with the lard. Is there any significance to the fork in doing it like that? Because I found, and I'll, the reason I asked you, I have a hand potato masher, okay? that is it's a bar, and then it has like something shaped like it, so it's shaped like a D, right? And the thing that masks the
and there's spaces between each wire.
Exactly. It's not the mesh type. It's just they're just.
No, I know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Exactly. We have one.
I use that on the pie crust normally. I followed
my. You know why, Mac?
Well, hold on. Let me just finish. I followed my mom's recipe to a T, and I used a fork, and the crust seemed flakier to me.
Yes. Well, the reason you use your former mashed potato thing or a fork is so your fingertips don't touch the ingredients because of the heat of your body. The temperature in your fingertips will warm up the lard or butter and the flour, and you don't want to do that. And that's why your mama used a fork, you get the same results pretty much.
Just to keep just to keep her hands out of it.
Yes, because the warmth of your hands will melt the butter. You want the butter as cold as you possibly can, and that's why she used the fork. And it just makes for a better pie crust. Your mama had game, baby.
No, I know she did. So, and I'm struggling with the pie. I wasn't struggling, but when I'm doing this, I always wonder about the cause and effect relationship of these different ingredients on ultimately the outcome. And was it an accident that I really did something I really didn't realize I did, or was it caused by doing these things in a very deliberate way, which I think would be the answer. But the apple cider vinegar question popped into my head. I also have one other comment. With the pie filling, I got a deep dish pie pan.
Yeah.
It's actually a Pyrex. And so the deep dish pie pan can take where a normal pie pan can take like 2.5 cans of cherries, the deep dish can take 5. And cherries aren't cheap. I don't know if you know that. They're like $6 a can.
Yes, they are.
That's a $30 pie, for God's sakes. As a matter of fact, I was looking for cherries the morning of Thanksgiving because I was supposed to go to my cousin's, but my uncle had some health issues. So they said, hey, we're not going to do that this year. I said, what? But I did good. You would have been proud of me. So, but I'm looking for cherries, and only some stores have them. So I'm going to store after store after store after store, going to the canned fruit aisle, getting there, boysenberries, blueberries, and then you see this kind of cavern. Like, come on, be two cans in the back. Nothing. Damn it. Off to the next store. I went to 5 stores looking for the cherries. Finally found them. $6.49 a can. It's a $33 pie when you get 5 cans of cherries. But here's the problem: at what point do you have to double the recipe for your pie filling? That's a baker's question.
The thing about doubling your pie recipe, your filling recipe, it depends on the thickness that you want as the result. So, you know, whether you're putting, how do you thicken your pie filling? You sugar, right?
Sugar, cinnamon, and then it's just slowly, you know, whisking it and letting it thicken on its own. I would say it's made to accommodate 2 to 3 cans of cherries. So up to 3, when you get to 4 and 5, and the thing about my mom's cherry pie is, and Kim will tell you that you fall in love with, that you really don't know, it's the taste of cinnamon in the cherries that's, Right.
And Mac, the thing is, when you double recipes, like the cinnamon, you might have to cut back a little bit on it.
Okay.
Not double the cinnamon amount, but maybe use 2/3 of the cinnamon amount.
Okay.
Cinnamon amount.
Because
that's a strong flavor in a larger portion. It just is. It's just the way it goes. You've got to be careful when you do things like that.
Because what happened the pie was good, but it was a little bit more tart because of all the extra cherries and no additional filling. Did that make sense?
Well, yeah, of course. But you know, you would have had to add extra sugar and extra cinnamon, but not double it. Like if you double the cherries, you don't double the sugar and cinnamon, but you get, you know, at least 2/3 of the amount. You follow me?
I'm with you. So ease into it.
Yeah.
All right.
If you're going to be making $30 pies, it's funny because Beth just bought one of those.
$30 pie?
five pans. The Pyrex, the glass, they're the best.
Yeah.
And, but I like a higher side myself.
Oh, really?
Because to me, it's all about the crust. And the more crust, the better I like it. So if it's going up the side higher, I'm all for that.
Well, you know what I like about it is that you can have smaller slices, but you're still getting more pie. So that means you can eat more of it. And I want to say those deep dish pies, I mean, pie pans are almost like doubling the pie.
They're pretty close.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing I'll tell you is I'm driving between stores on the morning of Thanksgiving, and I happen to go by a Marie Callender's restaurant at probably between 10 and 11 in the morning on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah.
It was on, I want to say, Beach Boulevard in Fountain Valley, California.
Yeah.
The line came out the door and wrapped 360 degrees around the building.
Oh, stop it.
I swear to God, I could not believe it. I mean, I thought, who has that much time on Thanksgiving? Well, maybe somebody's just going to go eat. To stand in line, it must have been the wait must have been 2 to 3 hours to get a pie. It was amazing.
The thing that bothers me about going out to eat for Thanksgiving, I mean, it's nice not having.
Oh, you know what? I didn't take it as that we're going out to eat. I took it as.
I know.
Okay. I took it as in line to buy a pie.
To buy a pie.
Yeah, at that time in the morning. So it was like between 10 and 11 in the morning.
Somebody messed up.
No kidding me.
A lot of people messed up. Jeez, that's funny.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, God.
I could not believe. All right, let's talk about soup. I made soup, by the way. Yeah. And the girls ate it yesterday, and they're like, did you make this? I said, yeah, what's up, girlfriend? And, and your goddaughter playing water polo.
Oh, God, send me a picture, man.
I'll send you a video of her scoring her first goal.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
At the left point, rips it. I was standing, I went, whoa.
And I'll bet she looks adorable in that little bathing cap.
Oh, my God. No, big ears, big nose, stick it out. But what's funny.
I can't wait to see it.
Oh,
man.
My God.
I can't wait to see it.
I mean, water polo is a contact sport. She talked about.
Oh, yeah.
Hello.
What goes on underneath the water?
Yeah, she's talking about she was getting pissed because she was trying to break away. She's among water polo players. Colleen's a good swimmer, one of the faster swimmers, right? She's one of the ones that races to the ball when they start their quarters. Okay.
Yeah.
And she wins so far every time. So anyway, she's trying to get away from this girl, and this girl keeps grabbing her suit underwater and pulling her back so she can't go. She said, I was getting pissed. I said, you know, there's got to be a way, Colleen, that you can kick her and not get noticed for it. just by kicking your feet.
No, yeah, but when they're in contact, you tell Colleen the next time to pinch the girl right on the bottom of her butt.
Colleen's in front of her, okay? She's trying to get away. Right? Yeah. That's retaliatory in nature, and she'll have to learn those things as she goes. But it is funny to listen to her about getting irritated. I said, look, until you give it back, it's going to keep happening. Trust me.
Yep.
And you have to use the Israeli response code. She said, what is that? I said, it's called disproportionate response. Whatever they give you, you give it back to them harder.
Yeah.
And then they won't do it to you.
Yeah.
She started laughing. I said, that's how you play. If you don't do it in physical sports, guess what's going to happen? That stuff's going to happen to you the entire game. And she said, well, I'm not for that. I said, yeah, no kidding. No kidding. So, but it's pretty fun. Pretty fun. Pretty fun. So, yeah. Colleen's going to be a three-sport athlete.
That is fantastic.
Butch, volleyball, water polo, and swimming.
So, yep.
Anyway, all good sport. So, anyway. All right, let's talk about making soup. Froze the carcass. What do we do?
Well, you before you freeze the carcass, you break it in, break it up, so you expose the bone marrow.
Ooh.
And freeze the carcass, the legs, any part, the wings, whatever. And you know, you pick as much of the meat off the bird as you can before you freeze it, and kind of get it, and then you pull it out of the freezer. You have a few stalks of celery, a couple of carrots, an onion, and you chop all those up coarsely. And then you want some garlic, and you make a roux, you know, your flour and butter, equal portions.
Okay.
You make that and you cook it 8 to 13 minutes until you get a nutty smell.
Okay. That's the roux, yes?
That's the roux. And then you set that aside. You know, you can do that the day
ahead. This is going to be a creamy soup?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we want a cream soup.
All right.
But then you throw the carcass and the garlic, clove, a couple of garlic cloves, just the skin taken off, and then the side of your knife, and then smash it so it releases all the flavors of the garlic clove. And then you throw everything in, and you fill the pot up to the top. And, you know, you could have a 2 or 3 gallon pot, and then you bring it to a boil. Oh, and throw a big bunch of parsley in there.
Got it.
Okay. And then we're just making the stock to make the soup. And you reduce that. You cook it. You bring it to a boil. You turn it down and you simmer it for about 2 hours. And you want to get, and you taste it as it's reducing and getting rich, getting the bone marrow and the flavor from the turkey carcass. And you take a little spoon, taste it, and it'll get further away from tasting like water after about an hour. But you want to let it go at least 2 hours. Hours. It depends on how much water you have in that. And you want a lot, but you cook it down, and then it'll reduce by about a third to when you get the right flavor. And then you strain that. And then if you want to start and make your roux fresh, go ahead. But if you want to pull the roux out of the fridge, you in the pan you're going to make the soup, you pour about 4 cups of the strained stock in the pan, and you mix the roux in, and then when it's all smooth, then you slowly add the stock and get it to the thickness you want, and then you add. I use heavy whipping cream. Is what I use, and you don't need a lot. Maybe a quart. That's all you need.
Okay.
And then you put in the turkey that you reserved and frozen after you've cleaned the carcass and any leftover turkey that's been frozen, and it had, you know, you thaw that when you're making your stock, and then. What I did for my, when I did it commercially, I would take a mixed bag of, frozen vegetables.
Right.
Carrots, corn, peas, lima beans, you know.
Right.
A garden variety
right.
of mixed vegetables. Whatever you want. You can put any veggie you want in there. Green beans. Got to have green beans in there. and then you add it. And then I take 1 cup of Harvey Bristol Cream Sherry. And it's a cream sherry that's on the sweet side.
Ooh.
And you add that in, and it gives it a flavor that you don't know what the hell it is, but it's rich and it's delicious. And that's my secret is, either I have a port that my friend, makes that I'll use in that soup, or you can get Harvey's Bristol Cream in any liquor store and you can get it in a small amount. And it's also great to put into cream of carrot soup, cream of cauliflower soup, especially good in cream of mushroom soup. And it doesn't take but anywhere from a half to a cup to a full cup of Harvey's Bristol Cream Sherry. And I think a fifth of it, I don't know what it costs now, but it's worth having it in your liquor cabinet.
It's not for making soup. It's not very much. Whatever it is, Harvey's Bristol Cream is not very much.
It's worth whatever they ask for it.
Right.
$20-$25. It used to be under $20 in my day. But it's Harvey's Bristol Cream Sherry. It's exceptional for making soups, cream soups, and to throw a little bit in there. And enrich the flavor and make it so, what the hell's in there? You want people to scratch their head going, that was the best soup. But anyway, and if you you don't want to make a cream soup, you can throw wild rice or white rice in with the turkey soup. But what I would do with the soup, and you don't need a roux, but if you throw rice in, you cook the rice in the soup after you've made the stock, and you cook the throw the rice in the soup, and that the starch from the rice will help thicken the broth a little bit, not much, but it'll give it a nice flavor and texture. So I always make a cream of turkey soup when I after Thanksgiving, because you can go ahead and make that soup up, and you can freeze containers. Beth and I will, there's only two of us, so we'll make a batch of soup, and then we'll put a couple of quarts away to pull out. So we want to have soup, and we're in the front row. And you just thaw it out in the fridge overnight, and then heat it up in a saucepan. I don't like to heat things up in the microwave. I just don't think it. I'd rather take the time to pull out a saucepan and put the thawed out soup in the saucepan and heat it up that way. And then if you add whatever salt and pepper you want to add. And then you're in the front row and superstar like you were with your turkey soup.
Yeah, I didn't do it. You know what? Here's what I did. I threw the carcass in the pot, and I let it I let it boil. Okay.
Yeah.
And then after I did that, what did I do? Then I strained it. Okay. Then I from the broth I removed the fat, so I used that kind of measuring cup thing. As I was straining the broth, I removed the fat from it, so I got the broth in. And then I threw a half a cup of rice in there, and I threw some biscotti and some pasta in there. Not a whole lot, but a little bit. And then I dumped some corn in there. I brought that all to a boil. I seasoned it to taste with a little, and all I did was add salt. There was no other seasoning. And then I threw a little bit of turkey in it, and I let it simmer. Muy delicioso. And because I paid attention over the years, I looked at the big pot of soup and said, I'm not going to be able to eat all that. So I dumped like thirds of it in Tupperware, put it in the freezer.
See, you're getting the hang of it, Max. That's exactly what the hell you should have done. It's very, very cool because freezing soup like that, and you think, geez, what am I going to eat tomorrow? You pull that out, stick it in the fridge.
Yeah.
You come, you warm it up in the saucepan the next day when you get home from work, and you're in the front row. And if you don't want to eat leftover soup for a month, you can pull it out a month later. You pretty much have about 2 to 3 months to leave that stuff in the freezer before you should eat it.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, that's awesome. And in fact, I busted it out last night. I busted it out.
Way to go, Max.
Well, what happened was Colleen's playing water polo, and then it starts raining. The pool's outside. It's in a quad area, so you're a little bit sheltered. But and in the pool, doesn't really matter if it's raining. And later, Colleen said it wasn't raining. Yeah, it was, girlfriend. She said, "You know that? I never knew that you could like get hot in a pool." I said, "You can't if you're swimming your ass off like that." She said, "Oh my God." Here's another thing I've never heard. She said, and Colleen's just been playing for a few weeks, right?
Yeah.
She said the girls on the varsity said don't use eye drops, put milk in your eyes. Have you ever heard that?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so the next time you go swimming and your eyes are hurting, try some milk, see what happens. Well, no, maybe ask somebody else to try it, see what happens to them, and then do it after they do it. <There you go. laughs> But
I will.
So we came home, and the soup was on. Because I had had some earlier, and I had just left it simmering on the stove. And so they sat down, and Colleen, you know when you're swimming like that? I don't know why swimming makes you hungry.
Well, think about it.
Right? But you get out of, like, the water, and you're, like, ready to eat a cow.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. See more.
Yeah, exactly. So they both ate the soup, and they said, "You made this?" I said, "Yeah, I did. I made that." They're like, "Whoa, Dad. What's up with you? Getting kind of feminine on us." I said, "Whoa, cooking's not feminine. It's a butch." To which they
go, "I've been cooking my whole life. I don't. The only thing about me, I'm not feminine, but I'm metrosexual like you."
I'm not metrosexual. And so when I said, "Hey, cooking's masculine," and they both said, "Yeah, it is." I said, "What? All the guys on TV that cook are dudes."
Yeah.
And then the response was, "Of course all the guys who cook on TV are dudes, but the women who cook on TV aren't dudes." I'm like, whatever. Whatever. So, anyway, we had an interesting conversation. Here's another question. Here's a question about gravy. Okay, first of all, I just want to tell you that I learned a lot from listening to your tips every day. I brined my turkey, and I had a timeline, and it all came out, and I just want to send a note to Kim and say thank you.
Good.
The other thing...
Did they have fun?
Well, we're going to get to that. The other thing I want to say is, for the first time, I really had an opportunity not to spend the whole day in the kitchen. And I want to echo something Max said. Kim's recommendation to use crock pots is off the hook. If you're not doing that, do it. All of my side dishes, yams, peas, mashed potatoes, yeah, all of that stuff went into crock pots. It slow cooked throughout, and it tasted absolutely delicious. But from my perspective as a cook, it was out of the kitchen and taken care of, so a big relief. I cannot emphasize enough, the next time you plan a big meal like that, whether it's Christmas, Easter, yeah, whatever, use those crock pots, because I think the crock pots were the difference in me only having to focus on the turkey and the gravy and having fun, and they made the difference in me having a great time. Thank you for that. I had the best Thanksgiving I've ever had.
Yeah, that's fantastic to hear that. Hey.
Crock pots. Who knew? Crock pots.
Who knew crock pots? God, this week I was in Bed Bath & Beyond, and I'm looking at the new cookers they have, and it's so high tech, and the crock pots and all the stuff that you can use without even using your oven. I mean, I think you could prepare a whole dinner without ever using your oven.
Today. No kidding.
You just have a counter full of crock pots toaster ovens and shit like that.
How do you get out of Bed Bath & Beyond without spending about $1 million?
I don't.
Because I'm not a straight up foodie like you are, but I go in there and I see all kinds of, like, oh, look at that, that's cool. Oh, I wish I could buy that. Oh, that would be cool to have. And I would only imagine that you would be like salivating at that stuff, literally.
Well, there's a couple of things about Bed Bath & Beyond. They send you, once you buy something, you start getting these 20% off coupons. And I'm telling you, brother, you stack them away, you look at the expiration dates on them, and then some are good, and they have all kinds of discounts, up to 20%. And you can buy big ticket items. You know, we bought our Vitamix is a $500 Vitamix, and we only paid $400 for it. You know, I mean, great bargains. And the other thing about Bed Bath & Beyond is the returns. They don't flinch. They just say, well, do you want your money back or do you want to get another one? And me, I bought this pasta machine where you hand roll pasta.
Yeah.
It's a hand crank machine. It was like $40, $50. And 1 year I went through three of them at Sanders before I spent the $700 to get one from Italy, you know. But with the, you bring it back, and I told them what I used it for. And the one I brought back from Italy was the gears inside were made of metal, and now they come out of China, and all the gears are plastic. So, but it's still, for domestic home use, it's still fantastic. But their return policies are as good as Nordstrom's. They just don't flinch. Yeah, sure, you got it. Thank you.
Really?
BBB.
I can't. Nordstrom's return policy is crazy. You can get fired at Nordstrom's if you question a guest who's bringing something back.
Yep. And the quality of their products is at, when I'm in Phoenix, if I go shopping for shirts, I go to Nordstrom's.
Well, how about, let me ask you this. So you're a Nordstrom employee, okay?
Yeah.
And somebody attempts to return something that you don't sell. What do?
You call your manager over.
Right.
It's exactly what I would do. And, I mean, Nordstrom's returns will trade out or give your money back on anything you buy in their store.
Right, but here's
that
the deal.
That they sell. But if you didn't buy it in Nordstrom's, you sure in the hell shouldn't get your...
okay, how about this? A tag on a dress that doesn't match the dress, right? So you zap the tag, and it says, little black dress, and it's an orange pair of pants, and the tag says $112.
You've got an issue.
Yeah. No, and so, but I would tell you this. Nordstrom, you know, employees are very, very conscious of what they question because you can get fired for it. You can get fired for it.
Yeah. I believe that. Yeah. It's a good store. There aren't very many good stories left.
No, Nordstrom, I grew up listening to that. Corporal Punishment Kathleen came from Seattle, which is the home of Nordstrom.
Yes, it is.
In Seattle, smoking in Parliament, we had the best store, Nordstrom's. Oh, my God. I grew up hearing about this legendary store. I was like, she's so making this stuff up. And then when they expanded nationally, you were like, oh, Kathleen. Knew her shit, man. Knew her shit. Email. Mac, what was Kim's favorite part of his Thanksgiving meal?
The dressing.
Really? Oh, my daughters.
It's always dark meat and dressing.
My daughters did not like the baguette that I used. They said, Dad, don't jack with the recipe. I was like, whatever. Whatever. All right. Kim told me to use baguette and to dry it out because it would hold the butter and the seasoning better.
And the turkey stock or
right.
Chicken stock while you're making it.
Right. And so
absorbs it, so gets that flavor going.
Catherine looks at me and says, you tell Kim to keep his nose out of our turkey. Do not... Dad, do not mess with the recipe. But they did say, no, it does hold the taste better. It just tastes different.
What kind of bread do you use?
I don't know. It'd be like just...
White bread?
Yeah.
Wonder bread?
Wonder bread.
Yeah, well, that's what I grew up using, my grandmother.
Yeah. But you know what? Here's what I did. I violated the rule that you talk about, okay?
Yeah.
And that is you make the traditional meal, and then you, in addition to, you make other things. But what I wanted, what the experiment was, and I violated that, and so she was not happy about it. Catherine is like, she's like 70 going on 26.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, bust it loose, girlfriend. So, she, yeah, exactly. The iceberg that the Titanic ran into looks like a dynamic event compared to my daughter. Yeah, she's a little bit stuck in her ways. So anyway, and then let alone the food she eats. Oh, my God. Go ahead and jack with her food. She has a conniption fit. So especially the things that, but I violated it. But I wanted to, because to me, people say that their stuffing in a pan tastes so great. It doesn't taste like stuffing out of the bird.
No, it doesn't. Not even close.
And my neighbor lady said, oh, my stuffing's awesome. She said, but I don't put it in the bird because of salmonella.
Oh, please.
I said, Ellen, nobody lives forever. She said, what? And her husband said, he's got a point.
Let me tell you something. My grandmother, she had a screened-in porch at their farm in New Jersey,
yeah,
where we had Thanksgiving occasionally. And she would make the stuffing the night before, or a couple days out, and she would mix eggs, raw eggs, within the stuffing.
Hello?
Then she would cover it up with foil and place it on the porch outside. Now, here you've got a raw turkey with stuffing that has egg in it, stuffed in a bird, and she sits it on the terrace. We called it the terrace, but it was a screened-in porch, so yeah, No critters could get it.
And nobody died.
Then the next morning, she'd throw it in the oven, and there we go. And I was clueless about salmonella, or trichinosis I knew about, but back then, in the 50s. But yeah. Yeah, so, and today, everything's so doggone sterile, and if you're going to put eggs in the stuffing, you don't do it until you stuff the bird just before you put it in the oven. You know, you can mix the dressing up the day before, but the day of the event, then you take an egg or two, depending on how much stuffing, and all that does is bind it together. And then you loosely stuff your bird. You don't get salmonella. Please, give me a break.
Yeah, that's what I said. I wasn't that eloquent. I just said, hey, nobody lives forever. The taste is to die for anyway.
Yes, there is no comparison.
She said, Mac, that's a figure of speech. It's not to be taken literally. I said, what? Exactly. So anyway. All right, man. First of all, thank you, as always, for doing this. Appreciate it. And you sound wonderful in your natural state. I love it.
I like to be natural, baby.
There you go. The All Marine Radio Head Chef. Have a great weekend, man.
You too. Best to the kids.
All right. Thanks, bud. I will send you that video. You'll love it.
Please do.
It's pretty,
I can't wait.
It's pretty butch. I'll see you.
Bye.
All right. There he is. The All Marine Radio Head Chef. Gunner's going to join us next here on a Friday edition of All Marine Radio. I'm going to ask him about the compelling question of the day.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it. The McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at allmarineradio.com.
To be fully fit, you have to be physically fit. You also have to be mentally fit.
I wish that more warriors would realize how important it is that you get the psychological support that you need so that you can focus on the rest of your life.
I think it takes strength in order to admit that you have an issue. But it also takes intuitiveness of a friend, a leader, a supervisor to pick up on the signal that the soldier is having issues and needs to seek professional help in dealing with it.
It's also important for the lowest possible levels of leadership to be very supportive in helping their members get the help that they need.
When I went to get help, I had more help than I could ask for from my entire command.
It's sometimes challenging to come to a senior staff member or senior officer in the unit with a problem.
There's not a commanding officer out there or a leadership staff out there that doesn't want to help. So don't hesitate. Come ask.
Learn more by visiting www.realwarriors.net or calling 1-866-966-1020.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.